From the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok. Our movie today is the final film in the Planet of the Apes series, Battle for the Planet of the Apes. Go chorus.
Yes.
Hey, no, it's okay. We've been watching all of them, and we're finally at the end of the line on this one. My name is Serge Delpierre, and today we have with us two.
Tim McMillan.
And
Heidi Hilliker.
And
Jim Usterman.
Our cue point is, I'm going to let you all guess this one. Yes, it is the very beginning of the film, because I don't know what it is. It's the ape films. It's the early 70s. But basically, there is no logo at the front. So it just comes up. So basically, you put your DVD in, and just as it starts fading up, or figure out how to do that, what I did is I actually let it roll to until it started fading up, ran it back, put it on pause, and then just inched it forward. It starts fading up, pause it there, and then when we're ready to go, I'll count down 3, 2, 1, play. You'll hit play. And then you'll be able to listen to us while you're watching the movie, or you can listen to this when you're doing something else like jogging or planning to take over the planet if you're an ape, or
planning a wedding.
Planning a wedding or designing some ape prosthetics. You could be doing that too.
Absolutely.
So so we've come a long, long way from Planet of the Apes, and we're near the end.
Oh, boy.
Let's talk about first time seeing Battle for the Planet of the Apes. I'm looking at you, Heidi.
I am too. We all are.
I know you are.
Don't look at me.
Again, probably the first time that I saw Battle was the same time that I saw the second, all the four sequels was all when I was 12 and I saw a marathon, I think, on, I don't know.
Because when you're 12, you can do that.
Yeah.
You can do that when you're older, too.
You can.
If you have the energy.
But actually, this one, I had a lot of staying power for me, just like the imagery of it and how uncomfortable it made me feel. So I haven't seen it in quite some time. The last time I saw it, I would say, was at least 8 to 10 years ago. So I'm excited to watch it again today, especially after we've watched all the other ape movies for Ape Week. So it'll be fine.
Yeah. Do you remember when you watched it originally, having watched the four in a row, how it struck you originally?
I think just by this point of the movies, I was really exhausted. And not just from like the amount of time that went into watching them, but just the content. Right. You know, I mean, I was 12. I was somewhere like 10, 11, 12. But for that age range of a child, I think this was just a lot of information and a lot of subject matter that was really just kind of intense, and then like the wackadoo science fiction feeling of it. I remember getting to this movie, and my sister Helena and I were watching it, and she stopped watching it. I think we were maybe only 40 minutes into this film, and she was just like, I'm not watching it. And I'm like, Helena, it's the last one. And she's just like, I can't stand this anymore. It's just not fair. It's just not right. And she just left. So
her reason was what? What was disturbing to her?
She just I think the roller coaster of having like people being slaves, and then like apes being slaves, and people being slaves, and then fighting each other. I think it just finally, she just got too exhausted of it. You
she
know,
snapped.
She was just like, "Just when is this going to end?"
She's an ape lightweight.
Well, she had made it to the last movie of the marathon.
That's true.
this series does, in a way, you know, take you around, you know, going one way and going another. It's not like watching four Bond films in a row. You always kind of have an idea how a Bond film is going to end, and the kind of some of the tropes and all that kind of thing. So this definitely does take you on quite a ride, and I don't think it was ever intended to be seen altogether. But you can do it. So it's interesting.
Well, what we talked about, you know, previously is just how all of the films just seem to kind of have this this just kind of not melancholy, but this non-hopeful ending. You know, they all just kind of like go off and what's going to happen next? It's never like a happy ending. It's never. I don't even think it's ever hopeful. It's
disturbingly
just
cynical.
Right.
It is.
And you never know what you think is going to come next. And I think you just feel uneasy. I did, anyway.
And you do feel ashamed being a human.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
It gives you this.
What's new?
Well, it teaches you how to be a better human. Maybe that was the whole goal.
Hopefully.
Through the apes. Jim?
You know, it's funny. I it's been forever since I've seen this. But like all the other ones, it just reminds me when I was a little kid, mm-hmm. just going, oh, they're so cool.
But do you remember the first time you saw it?
I don't specifically. You know what I do recollect, and I think I mentioned this when we were not on air, was how the atmosphere, the desert, you know, the art direction in the desert kind of, it did put me off. I didn't understand why suddenly the planet was like this.
Hmm.
And so it, that pulled me out of the film somewhat. And I recall that. So, but other than that, it's just a, you know, cool It movie.
Yeah.
not to okay. play that down, but.
But to me, it seems there's a lot of desert in Planet of the Apes, but after that, there's a lot of Malibu Ranch. There's a lot of greenery and vegetation in right. the other movies. And then it's Century City and.
But a very, Conquest. Yeah, a very stark change, though, from the city, which we saw crumbling at the end of the last movie. I mean, how much crumbling did it do? I mean, right. Are we in the same location? Did we migrate? Are we a Bedouin society?
We're in New York.
I'll fill you in. Well, actually, when we get to me, I'm going to fill you in on that.
Excellent.
That's a good question.
But it's Malibu Ranch for battle,
for
right?
For battle. I'm pretty sure it's Malibu Ranch. Yeah. It's like practically all Malibu Ranch and stages, basically. They shot a lot of it outside, if I remember, except right. for when they go into the city.
Right.
Do you remember the first time you saw this?
No, I don't. I've seen it in snippets. So this is one that I'm probably the most sketchy on, is this installment. So I'm looking forward to seeing exactly what it is, so I can take it in from beginning to end, and then I can make a true judgment of the film, which I haven't been able to do up until this time.
Awesome.
So there you have it.
Hmm.
I'm auditioning this final chapter today.
Wow, okay.
The pressure's on.
Ooh.
The pressure's on, battle.
Well,
yeah. Better perform.
I saw Battle for the Planet of the Apes when it first came out, and actually this is the one I saw with my friend Dean. Enjoyed it, of course, but it was still a little less than Conquest, because I really loved, once I'd seen Conquest, I was just like, oh, I love it. That is like my favorite. Except for maybe Planet. Okay, but Conquest is really good, so Battle was a bit of a come down. It's a different type of story. So that was my initial reaction to it. I saw it, you know, successive years. I'm like, still, yeah, blah, 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 blah. But I've got a thesis that I want to see if it bears out here recently, because I haven't seen Battle for like 10, 15 years now. I don't even know the last time I saw it. But my thesis is that this, well, because when we're talking about Roddy McDowell in a second too, is that Roddy McDowell essentially, you know, is kind of anchored the series, mm-hmm. especially with the last film, with his performance. But I think this is the film that allows him to really shine in the biggest performance beginning to end, because in Planet and Escape, he was playing with Kim Hunter. So he wasn't really the star.
He wasn't in Escape.
He was in Escape. He was.
Roddy McDowell was in
Escape from the Planet of the Apes. He wasn't in Beneath. So you had Planet, then you had Beneath is where he went off to direct the film.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting mixed up. Thank you for right. setting me straight.
And then he came back, and then he did Escape. It was very, very charming, but he was Cornelius. And then he comes back and see, you know, in Conquest, and then he holds his body differently. Just a whole, he transformed himself. And there he didn't have a lot of dialogue. And now in Battle, this is where he really, I mean, he's the king. He's the leader of everything. So this is his biggest role. And this is his gig. This is probably the biggest role Roddy McDowell ever had. And he carried it through the series. But I wonder, having not seen it, how well it holds up and how much, if that's true, of the way I think it is, not remembering too much, but just thinking about it. But a few things, actually, Jim, that you said is that the whole thing about it being in a desert location is the idea is that after the Ape Rebellion, basically man turned against man and dropped the bombs and cities were irradiated. And so the apes, with some humans, migrated out to whatever cities. Now, in the comics and in whatever the I guess, non-canonical or whatever was written stuff, Heidi, is that this conquest theoretically happened in San Francisco. This is from what I remember reading, and so
I guess that makes sense.
It's all cheating because then
I'll make it make sense.
There was the way they made it make sense is that essentially after this, Mendez and his people take the bomb, and then they take this transcontinental subway all the way to New York and set up shop there. I'm like, okay, whatever. I just kind of, you know, you just kind of have to go with it that this happens somewhere in North America and maybe it happens close to, I mean, in other words, you can't get geographically tied down in a way, because I don't think they thought it out as much as we would love for them to have done.
Well, and there's a lot of time that passes, you know, between
2,000
the
years.
Planet and the apes. Yeah.
Yeah. A little while.
So they had time.
Anything could have happened.
It's like Book of Eli. They had a while to get across the country. So that kind of answers that. Tim, I know we were talking about Roddy McDowell. Do you want to talk about Roddy, about his career a little bit before we get started?
Well, Roddy McDowall had a vast, vast career. He was Hollywood. I mean, he started out as a child actor, brought over from England. His first film was How Green Was My Valley, really, that I know of. That it was his first American film that introduced him to the U.S. And I recommend that film. Anyone who hasn't seen it and would like to know what Roddy McDowall was like as a child actor, if you've never seen him, rent How Green Was My Valley and take a look at a beautiful film and a beautiful performance by an old soul. Roddy McDowall was an old soul, I always felt, whenever I watched him as a kid. And then he bridged the gap. He was one of the few child stars who was healthy, happy, together, studied his craft, became much better at it, much more accomplished, and he went on to bigger and better things, and he bridged the gap to become a leading man and not just a character actor. His performance in Cleopatra was supposed to have garnered the Academy Award, but due to a error in submission. He was a best supporting actor. That was his category, but they put him in as best actor by mistake, and he was disqualified, and a lot of people say he was robbed. He would have gotten the Oscar for that. Then a lot of people know him currently as far as things like Fright Night, as far as what would be popular more today, even though it's considered a classic now. Fright Night was made back in what? Early 90s or late 80s. But not besides being professional and what? Yeah, the Poseidon Adventure. He was in that. I'm looking at his IMDb thing.
He did the Mad Hatter voice on Batman the Animated Series.
Actually, he was on Batman the Original Series. He played the Mad Hatter.
Yeah, then he did the voice on
Oh, wow. Nice. Okay.
There you go.
That's right, because I remember there was an episode of Batman where he escaped through a little trap door that was like this big. I'm like, how do you escape? That makes no sense.
Because he's Batman.
Because he's the Mad Hatter. It's the Batman TV series.
Yeah.
And not just as far as... he was in tons of stuff. He's one of my favorite people.
Yeah, if
people.
You look him up on IMDb, it just
all
goes on and on.
All the TV shows, all the guest
on,
stars,
on,
all the
yeah.
guest spots, and all the movies. But more than that, what impressed me about him was what a nice man he was. As far, I didn't know him personally, but everyone who did, he was considered the one person you could trust in Hollywood. They say that he knew all the secrets of Hollywood because everyone told him. All the women he worked with, all the actors, all the actresses, directors, and he kept the secrets. And then the big thing with Roddy McDowall was that he was a collector. He loved Hollywood. He loved the film industry, and he loved educating people about it. He loved preserving the work of the Hollywood industry, and he collected many, many films, and he had a huge library. Had probably the biggest library of a private citizen, and then the FBI came down on him and stormed his place and cleaned it all out and removed it from him and took his property because copyright stuff or certain things and what he had stored.
Oh, he had
films.
Some illegal copies, or
I don't know the exact details of it, but the FBI was not happy.
Somebody
I
won't
say FBI,
happy.
But it was just as far as copyright issues, and they took all of his stuff pretty much. That. Was stored at his place, and it was a huge archive, and he spent his life amassing it, you know? So that was a really big brouhaha that happened in Roddy McDowall's life. But he always was a fan as well as being an accomplished actor in the industry. He was a fan of his own industry, which is a wonderful thing.
I want to look more into that, about them seizing his library.
His
films. I mean, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
That sounds like a story in and of itself.
Could be, yeah, as far as if someone were to dramatize that. I'm sure it would be an interesting thing to watch.
Now, he went on, after this, he actually went on, they did a Planet of the Apes TV series, and he went on and starred in it.
Yeah.
And he played another character by the name of Galen. And I remember seeing that show. It wasn't too bad. It wasn't too good. It's just, you know, there's only so much you can do on a restricted budget with something like Planet of the Apes and the prosthetics and
yeah,
all that kind of thing.
I think it just
series.
Evolved into a chase thing that the two astronauts and Galen were always being chased by something. That's what the TV series, you know, it's just chase, on the run.
Well, that was kind of popular. I mean, the Hulk series.
I've never seen the series. I'd be interested in seeing a few episodes, maybe not the whole thing.
Oh, I think it's worth seeing, but I mean, you'll go like, oh, that's a 70s series. I mean, it's cool. The makeup was really good. And the thing is, he was unsure about doing it because the makeup really was wearing on his skin, but he said, okay, I'll do it. And I think it lasted for...
One season, right?
I think it was like 13 episodes or something like that.
You can see clips of it on YouTube.
14 episodes. And you can get it on DVD, too. So it's worth, I mean, I guess if you've, you know, if you've watched the Planet of the Apes series and you're unfamiliar, or even if you're familiar and you haven't seen the TV series, I think it's worth watching a few of them. And you might be able to get into it, and it's, you know, it's entertaining.
It was James Naughton was the one actor.
And Ron Harper.
And Ron Harper, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. And then he played Galen, and then I think there was a General Urko played by some actor, and then, of course, they had an orangutan of some sort, and they were hunting for the humans who were a little more advanced than the humans we had at the time. So they kind of wove it into also actually into the mythology as it developed, you know, for Planet of the Apes.
But it was had many rebirths, a huge franchise going from 5 feature films into a TV series to an animated cartoon, all the comic books, the novelizations, all the toy merchandising. This is the juggernaut of the franchises as far as merchandising and all that that has been taken for granted, but what is now known today with how you do a film and how you market it.
Yeah.
I mean, Bond and all his stuff, but then Planet of the Apes took it a step further, I think.
Well, you didn't see a Bond series or a Bond animated cartoon.
Yeah, and actually it moved in comics also. Marvel put out a large format black and white comic, which I collected all of them. And which was filling in, of course, the canon of what happened in between and during the time periods. And this is how I learned a lot.
What a fun project to work on as like a writer or an artist, you know, like just like filling in all the gaps in the Planet of the Apes world. That would be really fun.
I was fascinated by that. And that's how, it, you know, I heard the explanation about San Francisco and the tunnel. And I was like, well, this is what happened. I'm like, okay, fine. All right.
I buy it.
Okay. I'll buy that.
I'll buy that. There's no movie to fill it in, so I'll let you fill it in.
The Planet of the Apes world is limitless because you can play with time. You can blow up the world. You can go back in time. You can go forward. Anything is possible in the Planet of the Apes universe, apparently.
I even got... I don't want to call them comics, but little storybooks in comic book format with a little 45 RPM record that you could play along with it that would essentially act, you know, play it out as a little radio play.
Oh, my God. I think I actually...
Remember those?
Yes.
I just remembered I had those. And at one point, my plan, and I just never did it because I didn't have the technology, was I was going to shoot with my Super 8 camera, I was going to shoot each panel and then take the sound from the record and sync it up. But, I mean, you know, you couldn't do sync sound for Super 8 or anything like that. Well, I think you may have done it, Tim. But it was just like way more complicated than...
Yes, you know, it was, and I still did it.
Than I was able to... I didn't have my hands on that technology. Wow, yeah. But they were cute. They were cute.
Well,
things.
I got the Planet of the Apes tea cozy.
Ooh.
I still use it on my teapot, but I'm kidding.
I did. Oh. I had the Beneath the Planet of the Apes soundtrack that I listened to for this.
It's the Zero Cozy.
I bought all the novelizations.
Oh, that's what I want.
And still have them in pristine condition, by the way.
Laugh it up. I have Battle for Somewhere. I just couldn't find it. Yeah. And actually, the battle cover, and then we're going to start the movie, actually has the last image of the gorillas from Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. I'm like, why is that image there? Pick an image from the movie, but whatever.
I wonder if it, too, was written by John Jakes, you think?
I'm sure I could find out for you. It might take a little time. I got to find the book. I know, John Jakes from what was it, North and South?
North and South.
North and South, that's right. What John Jakes
Love
wrote.
And War, Heaven and Hell.
Ying and Yang.
A classic... series of
that's right.
What
that's
clever
right.
titles!
Those were big books. I remember them. The novelization of Conquest of the Planet of the Apes was written by John Jakes. So, yeah, you know, this is Battle. I don't even know who wrote that novelization. And actually, one last thing, and then we're going to get started. This is written by the Corringtons, who wrote
Omega Man.
The Omega Man. That's right. So, okay, all right. Let's watch the movie.
Whee. Yay, last one. This is exciting.
This is.
How's it going to end?
We're going to get 45 minutes into it, and we're going to have to leave you, though, Heidi, I'm afraid.
Is it on mute?
Hang on a second. Thanks for reminding.
We're just getting all of our ducks in a row.
That's right.
Before
my phone
we
is
push
off.
Play.
I'll text back whoever called me later. Okay, remote is up in the air, and I'm going to count down. 3, 2, 1, play.
And you know, it's only the last two films, including this one, that don't start with a seashore.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And this is North America, 2670. It's the decayed. Yeah, it's the decayed look. And who's speaking?
John Huston.
It's John.
Or is it?
It's John Huston.
No, it's the guy from There Will Be Blood. It's Daniel Day-Lewis.
Cut it out. You're making fun of my Planet of the Apes.
No, I'm making fun of Daniel Day-Lewis's accent and There Will Be Blood.
That's interesting. They're coming in over the water, and they got... I think it's amazing that they got John Huston. And then basically he retells the story of what's happened over the past two films.
Bring us up to speed.
That's what we got to do every time, you know? Because maybe the audience hasn't seen the other films.
That's right. But also... It's an interesting technique. If you watch kids' films, they tend to do that too.
Yeah.
They'll stop at some point, then they'll recap.
Because you forget.
Exactly. But already by now, they'd figured out, oh, children like this.
Aw, I miss Zira.
Yeah, that was brutal. That ending
for
Escape is always brutal.
So this came out how long after Conquest?
1 year. They made them one after the other. This was Battle was 73.
Just crank them
Conquest up. Conquest 72, Escape was 71, Beneath was 70. One after the other. Can you imagine that, making four films in 4 years?
Mm.
I'd love to do that.
Oh, God.
Wait a minute. Okay, they just rewrote that. Hastline, they didn't want to... You know what? They probably didn't want to pay to have
Eric Braeden
in the film.
Right,
so they did that.
Ow.
So they just rewrote the film. That's not true. No.
The flat feet.
That helicopter shot always got me.
They wouldn't take him in the military with those flat feet.
Always got me.
And here we are at Conquest.
Yep. And it's interesting. It's from the ape point of view that the lawgiver is telling
us. Right.
The ape perspective.
Yeah. And you know what? I kind of don't mind having a recap like this.
Well, yeah. I mean, and back... You know, when these films are coming out, it's not like you got a chance to watch the movie before you went and saw the next one. So it's nice to have a little recap.
That's right. We did.
It had been a year for this audience.
We didn't have video. And I mean, that's very, very true. There was no way. And it wasn't on TV yet.
And as we've discussed previously, you know, this was kind of a new thing for movies to be made, with like a franchise like this, where you're continuing a story one film after another. So, I mean, the audience kind of did need a little bit of a recap.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of story to cover.
This does seem like a television show, though. I'm just going to say. You know how, like, previously.
Right.
Previously on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
We'll show you the whole episode.
Previously on Planet of the Apes.
You know, I love this guy.
That's Lou Wagner.
Yeah, I'm glad they showed him again.
I like Lou Wagner.
Never give an ape a cleaver.
Nets and knives, you know?
That's
how you
want
a war.
Unless you want him to do something bad. Ah, Century City. Yes. I like this little recap, and they can take the choicest parts.
So would someone who hadn't seen the films be totally lost since John Huston isn't giving a narration? They're sort of saying, what is going on?
Well, I think, no, he was giving the, I mean, he was explaining.
He did at the beginning, but then he dropped out. It's all been visuals ever since.
Right.
From one film to the next, so. Since I'm biased,
well,
since I've seen him, I don't know what
he explained that, he didn't say about, after it showed Azira and Cornelius dying, he talked about then how their son grew up, and then they showed him in the society.
Mm. And now basically he's talking about that. This is where, here we go. He explains the whole thing of how essentially everything got bombed to crap.
But no reason why.
Well, just because... Well, it basically, it's because of the Ape Rebellion, I don't know, whatever happened, and basically all the cities, all the bombs went off. Remember, this is back in the early 70s when we were worried about the bombs.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know... And what's really cool is that now he's gone back, and now he's telling about a story a long time ago, what our current story is, where we're familiar. So I really like that device.
Yeah, I do too. Because it kind of connects you back to the first movie a little
exactly.
bit.
Exactly. Connects it. Well, mm-hmm. You know, it's saying, what I really like is it's saying, this after this story, there's a lot more story that comes after it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
And I just really like those things when you've created a history in an instant of so many hundreds of years of so many other things or tens of years.
So and now we get to see apes on horses again.
Yeah,
like that.
And now it's like the bad. It's like a Planet of the Apes. And now it's once again it's in the distressed ape font that we had in Conquest, also,
which I don't like as much. It's like the Planet of the Apes. font. It's just, I don't know. It doesn't stand out as much to me.
But it's close enough, you know. Natalie Trundy, again, as Lisa. Oh, that was Claude Akins, actually, that we saw on screen. Who was a TV actor. Well, he did movies, but he was a big TV actor.
I forget the TV series he was known for. It was in the 70s.
Moving On with Frank.
The Trucker?
Moving On with Frank Converse. It was about two truckers.
Yeah, The Trucker. That's why it's... Yeah.
Oh, it's called Moving On.
I know, but...
With the trucker.
Not communicating.
You guys are saying the same thing?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, he was a trucker.
It was called Moving On, I think.
It was called the... Yeah, he was the trucker. And then he...
Sorry. I'm getting pudgy.
And Paul Williams.
Smart ass. Introducing. Actually, this was introducing Paul Williams. He did a Phantom of the Paradise after this.
Wow.
With Brian
De Palma.
With De Palma, yeah. I think, yeah.
We were just talking about Paul Williams.
Leonard Rosenman, who did the music for Beneath the Planet of the Apes. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of shots of this one particular gorilla.
Richard Klein.
Richard Klein. Oh,
he's the one who could ride.
He did Body Heat.
He also did The Fury and King Kong, the remake, 1976.
You had to mention, which Lorenzo Semple Jr. wrote.
Yep.
Who also wrote Three Days of the Condor and Super Cops and the Batman TV series, which Roddy McDowall and Victor Buono were both
guest
in.
Started on. That's right.
6 degrees.
There Circle we go. Of life.
It all ties together. You know what? I think I really like all these establishing shots.
Me too. I really like this intro.
Title sequence.
Yep. It takes us right to where we are in the story.
And we know visually now everything that's going on. We can see the humans are basically being abused by the apes. And this is definitely an alpha ape. There's Frank Capra Jr. again. That's cool.
Now, the art direction's interesting in that the brutal apes are darkly colored, much like in the last film, the humans were in dark colors.
Yeah.
And the thinkers and creatives are in the light colors.
That's interesting. Wow. There's the Corringtons again.
But they gave credit to the story to Paul Dean.
Oh, my bad. I thought Paul Dean did all four. Okay, the Corringtons of this one. Yeah, Paul Dean. Actually, I think Paul Dean, if you read about it, I think he may have been sick at this time and died shortly afterwards. Hmm. J. Lee Thompson again.
Directing the last two installments of the features.
I guess they had confidence in J. Lee. Who would then go on to direct for
I love his medieval look.
Canon, I know.
He must have worked very fast.
And actually, let's talk about this, Heidi. This is post-apocalyptic.
Jacket. Yeah, it's post-apocalyptic. This is my era.
This is post-apocalyptic. there is no indoor plumbing, and there is no electricity.
It looks very much like Robin Hood and his Merry Men.
You would think the apes would have thought twice about that.
Like, I don't think the apes blew everything up. Now, this is guy's Austin Stoker, who plays McDonald, but in this film, he is the brother of the other McDonough.
Oh.
Yes.
Twins?
No. There's Aldo. Oh, he's not nice to human.
That's Claude Akins.
Look at that contempt in his face for the humans. How weak they are. It's like, I have to do this for you.
Didn't you notice the two holes in his mouth? Would be probably for breathing.
Interesting.
Right behind his teeth. General.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not mean to everyone.
So here, ape shall never kill ape, which is kind of like their prime law.
Yep.
Which shows up actually in Beneath the Planet of the Apes, if you recall.
That man kills man, General, but ape doesn't kill man.
Yeah, General Ursus says ape never kills ape, or maybe Zaius says it. When they're in the Forbidden Zone and when they see all the illusion of all the apes burning. No, he doesn't like being in school. Uh-oh.
What a ridiculous joke.
Poor Abe. And his name is Cornelius. I thought that was a really nice touch. I really liked it.
Yeah, I like it too.
Now, let's, let's talk about ape evolution here. From Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, where the apes did not have the ability to talk, and now they all have the ability to obviously reason and talk.
Well, I think that this has to go with my theory of...
experimentation?
Yeah, genetic experimentation.
I will go with that theory. Thank you.
I accept that as truth.
You have filled in the gap. And now we have...
Paul Williams?
Paul Williams. He's talking about faster than light travel and paradoxes.
Oh, the thinkers. I love how we're already starting to see that divide amongst the apes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that we're seeing, I guess, the natural inclinations of different species coming out. Oh. Oh. Ape shall never kill Abe. Wow.
Aw.
I sure am seeing a huge difference in the quality of makeup. The seams are really showing in these appliances.
Yeah.
If I look at Claude Akins and look at his makeup, and I think of James Gregory and how his gorilla makeup was,
right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's light years difference.
Yeah.
But it's still...
I really can't suspend my disbelief as fully as I'd like to.
The makeup's definitely better in this film, though, than in the last.
Yes.
Because now they actually have to talk.
Oh. And this is where we learn the first big lesson, that a human should never say no to an ape. We have to be told this. I would have written that a little differently. This is way exposition-y. Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. Paul Williams pulled it out.
Yeah, he did. He just got all that information, like, out there.
Yeah.
I know. And it's, and for introducing, it's, he says, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Claude Akins was in a movie, The Devil's Brigade, with William Holden.
Oh, my God. That's,
yeah.
Wow.
That's where I was. I just saw him recently in a film.
Yeah.
That was it.
Run, teacher.
Yeah. And now the thing is, we haven't been introduced to Caesar.
Nope, we haven't seen him yet.
You know, we've just, I mean, we're 13 minutes into the film. We have not seen Caesar yet.
And it's interesting that they suggested that Caesar's anger was somehow extreme.
Last time we saw Caesar was Conquest for the Planet of the Apes.
Right.
Don't grab the teacher.
And now we're going back through the village. So we're seeing how it's structured. Everything's in. They're all living in tree houses.
How many chases have been at the Malibu Ranch? I just want to know.
It's a very chaseable place.
It's a very chaseable place, yes.
That's right. Okay, this chase is now going on too long.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what they do.
They do.
That's what they do.
And it ends right where...
We introduce Caesar.
There we have him. Oh, and they've changed their clothing now to reflect what
they wear in the future.
What they wear in the future, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Though I have a hard time believing that they would keep fashions for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
But I'll go with it.
I'll go with it, I guess.
Man, he's being rather verbose and...
I mean...
But it's great. Virgil is... I love Virgil.
Wonderful expression.
Because he's so smart. I mean, that's right. He said no.
And what does that seam?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's just...
The upper and lower on the mouths are really bad.
Yeah.
The appliances. If you look at the close-up on Paul Williams, you can see the seams around his...
So it's probably been, I guess, I remember this was like probably 10, 15 years since the events of Conquest. Oh, man.
Now we go back to being dumb.
Ooh. Man.
The kid is cute.
That's great. I mean, we've just basically we've just seen
he's got a lot of personality.
We've just seen Caesar be essentially leader and definitely have a grip even on the gorillas and
father. Mm-hmm. Yes.
He was a loving father.
Yeah.
In that scene.
Yeah. And he's you know what's interesting is he's not angry. Well, he's different than the Caesar. Oh.
I got a news flash for you. I've never seen this.
I think Aldo's going to be a problem. You've never seen this?
No. You're just realizing you haven't?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we won't spoil a big thing for you then.
The writing's very different in this.
How so?
Very poetic, I think.
That's interesting. Well, the Corringtons, you know, wrote the dialogue. Paul Dean wrote the story.
Right.
So, though Paul Dean's actually, I mean, if you listen to some of what he wrote for the other films, it was actually pretty poetic, too. When he got to his speeches.
You know what? You're right. When his speeches were quite, actually.
But it's interesting that you're saying weaved through it, it is a little more. This is actually, it's a very domestic film. I mean, you know, we're living in the village.
Yeah.
Here's what our daily life is like. There is no big crisis.
The urbanness of Conquest is nowhere to be seen.
The urbanness of any of it is gone. Yeah. Of escape. And now he's complaining that they're vegetarians. Oh, he talks about our master's command.
It's the Yul Gibbons installment of the Planet of the Apes. That's a reference. Yul Gibbons, the guy famous in the 70s. I can eat anything. I'll eat this. So
yeah.
The one who had nothing to do with highfalutin technology.
That's true. Wow. Everything's just turned. I mean, it's interesting the thesis it puts forward that everything's been turned around.
Yeah.
And flipped.
You know.
Uh oh. Ah.
That's not true.
So. Oh, that's the whole Virgil thing about time having no end.
Now, yes. Ring Corporation.
Dun, 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 dun.
Wait, what was that?
We're 18 minutes in.
Ring Corporation.
Oh.
We're going to get to see his parents?
We're going to get to see his parents. What I don't like about this is why has this never come up before?
Yeah, it's a little hard to believe.
Why on this day? Because that's the point, you know. Why is now McDonald only
it's pretty contrived.
Mentioning it?
McDonald is really good at like getting, or he and his brother, his twin brother, are both really good at just like having information appear. You know, tons of researched information just out of nowhere.
Did they not show video of his parents in the previous film when he was in the office of the governor?
No, they showed the president, played by John. Randolph. It played John Randolph, who was the head of the commission.
Oh.
Yes. No, we didn't see them. We saw a picture of Cornelius.
Okay.
And so now we're getting the whole rundown of, ooh, see? Now that's real good post-apocalyptic stuff. You protect your city. You have places underneath the city.
And he breaks into song.
I mean, I don't mind them going into the city and finding this information. I just, you know, it's contrived how, like, all of a sudden it comes up.
And
because now he happens to mention, oh, by the way, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, well, by the way, yeah, you know.
Pretty weak.
And Ricardo Montalban never showed him any videos of his
parents.
Well,
he didn't have any of that.
But there were no real videos.
They just left
him
with him. Like, that was very sudden when he gets the baby ape.
Yeah. I mean, no.
It's not like preconceived. They didn't like leave them with anything.
The tapes that they have are left over from when they were interviewed
by
for
the government.
By the government, yeah.
Oh, so.
The commission, yeah.
Well, there might be some things from when they were on the news.
I mean,
and
I thought they were,
too.
Yeah, I thought
all
they
the
were
stuff
pretty
from
well
Escape,
broadcast.
Yeah.
Right.
All but that, when they became celebrities in Escape.
Look, he is happy. Caesar is happy.
Been playing the makeup there.
And now, of course, this is the first time we've heard Lisa speak.
Yeah. Well.
Other than her little no.
Yeah.
But I don't count that no. Hi, Natalie Trundy. One day you will be a mutant.
Yes, one day you will be.
But not today.
But her eyes always look the same. You can really always, she has very distinctive eyes. I can always tell it's her.
Yeah, she has beautiful eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Very beautiful eyes.
Aw, little Cornelius.
Roddy, he really does work the music, I mean the makeup there.
Yeah.
Oh, by now.
Constantly.
By now, he is a master of making it work. You know, the interesting thing is now we're in kind of in like in a bit of a paradise. You know, they live out in the wild. I mean, they still have their problems. They're still trying to resolve themselves
right.
structurally with power, with the gorillas. But it is paradisical. It is utopic.
Oh, absolutely. And
this is Lou Ayres, who plays Mandamus.
I'll be able to tell by his voice.
Oh, he had a great voice.
Yes.
That's Lou Ayres.
Yes.
What's that guy's name?
Which one? Paul Williams?
Yeah, but what's the character?
Virgil.
Virgil.
I love Virgil.
Oh, man, yeah.
And this is great that they have an armory, and he is protected. He protects the arms.
From Caesar.
From Caesar. From anyone.
Yeah,
exactly.
From anyone.
Which I think is really an interesting social concept.
Mm-hmm.
Virgil. What a fitting name.
I was keeper of his own conscience. Okay, yeah. Yeah, 6 questions. I think we need to have that in this country. We need to have 7 questions before you're given a weapon.
Yeah.
So does this convince him? Okay, he's like, all right. You want to go into the city, I'll give you the arms, yeah. the weapons.
Oh, contaminated humans.
Wow.
Okay.
Look at that.
Yeah, look at that. I want that room in my post-apocalyptic community.
Are you going to have a keeper of the armory?
Yep. But it's not going to be an old man.
It's going to be an old ape.
It's going to be an old ape.
You're going to call him Mandamus. You are called Mandamus.
Oh, we're going to have such fun.
I'm going to have to think about this armory thing. Okay, yeah, all right. Now you see that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
You know? Interesting
yeah.
perspective.
You know, exactly. If the afterlife is wonderful, just go. It's like,
what are you waiting for?
I agree.
You know?
But depending on your religion, if you kill yourself, you don't go there.
But that doesn't even make sense.
See, that's
because that's a justification for why you wouldn't kill yourself. See?
Right. So that way you have to live your life. So you live your life until, well, you don't live your life and then it'll be blissful. Whereas at least, you know, in Judaism, basically, some would argue with me, it's a little more complicated than this, but basically the idea is live your life now.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Live your life. This is your life. Yeah. Live your life. Now, there are other things larded on top of that, definitely, that you must follow, like the Ten Commandments, blah, blah, blah. But still, it's now. It's not for later. And now I guess this was a Malibu. Well, they've moved to another location now, but they're moving off the Malibu Ranch into the Forbidden Zone. See, this was so cool. They're going into the Forbidden Zone.
Right, it's such a tie back. I love it.
I love it. Yeah, exactly. It's really, really cool. Bad glass paintings and matte paintings and all. I loved it.
Meanwhile, people are mutating.
I'm glad to see the different.
So cool too.
I'm glad to see the different topography.
Yeah, it's nice. And it makes you feel more like apish. I don't know. There's something about like being in the desert that
the
makes you feel.
The sun's not moving, but it's getting darker. Did you notice that?
Well, it's, in a way, it's bringing us back to the, I guess, the
first movie.
Well, the first movie, the psychology. Yeah, yeah. I didn't want to say the psychology, but I guess the geography of the first movie.
It has that barren, lonely, prehistoric,
right.
bad yeah. matte painting feel.
As we Sorry.
Just like that. Just like that.
I couldn't resist.
Yep. And I mean, what I like is they've given themselves a time limit built into the script. They can only stay there so long because there's radiations, and he's got the Geiger counter, so they have to get in, they have to get out. They can't spend too much time. So that keeps at least the script moving. So that's a good construct.
Yeah, good device.
And Roddy McDowall tripped over his 8 feet in the last shot.
I hate when that happens.
I like that the even though the matte painting may be bad, I like the concept of it where everything looks like it's melted.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Forefathers. How many generations down are you, buddy?
That was some serious heat.
It's your father's. But, no, yeah. But that would mean, this once again, this was so cool. This is like, well, it's not cool in reality. It's cool as a fantastic
when
element.
When did they explain about McDonald and that he's the brother and not just like the non-aging guy?
I don't know. It's knowledge I picked up.
I think it's the same guy.
I think, no, it's not. But I think he says my brother at one point. He's like one line, my brother, blah, 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 Governor Breck. And then they keep on sailing through. Oh, you know that car was definitely, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to do this car and that's going to let us, it's like footprint in the, footprint in the snow. It's going to let us know everything else is like that. And then that's it.
Apparently it was attacked by a polyfoam bomb.
See, it's important.
They needed some charred skeletons in the car.
11th Avenue. Ooh, ape management. Oh, Breck had a...
As in Governor Breck?
He had a street named after him and everything.
He wasn't a very scary bad guy, Breck.
Breck?
Yeah.
Really?
No, in retrospect, I'm just thinking... He was just so one-dimensional, you know, which
retrospect.
And now we have our mutants.
Retro Breck.
Retro Breck.
Now, at least these
not too intimidating.
At least these mutants don't look like the mutants 2,000 years later. And there's Severn Darden.
Oh, there he is.
Severn Darden. He's a riot.
Korn? Was that his name?
Culp.
Culp.
I think his line's like, nothing works around here. I wonder if they salvaged any of the sets. I don't know. I can't even tell what they did here. I like the Dutch tilt.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Culp is the governor.
Ooh.
Oh,
we're moving into Mad Max territory.
Important was Sir Le Havre. That's France Noon. Oh, one thing to mention here for our listening audiences, and we discussed this before, this is the extended version. Actually, all the versions of Battle for Planet of the Apes that are out likely are the extended versions, which is what we've been seeing since it's run on TV since like the 80s. And it has additional footage that wasn't included in the theatrical release. Like, they actually show the bomb in this version. There's a few more scenes, too.
There you go. You got that going for you.
Severn Darden, he's actually a really good comedic actor, as you can tell. He's definitely playing the moments.
Right. But he told that. I mean, he tells that joke and then he laughs at himself.
Exactly.
I like that.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
We don't get too much laughter in these movies, so I'll take it when we get it.
Yeah, I take it when
actually, no, that's right. This is the one that was like the truest humor we've had.
Yeah.
Oh, other than Conquest, also. With some of what Caesar did.
I do love all the names.
Yep.
In all of the films, you know. They're very creative.
Yeah. And now Mendez is from Beneath the Planet of the Apes. Mendez 2 was leader of the mutants, and now this is Mendez 1.
Right.
2,000 years before. But okay, I'm going with it. Oh, that's wild. They don't realize that there's anyone else out there. They think
that's an odd concept.
They think everyone died. They think they're the only survivors.
Yeah, but then they would all also think that they were all together in the room at the same time.
What do you mean?
Well,
maybe I missed something.
Obviously, any of their group hasn't wandered out.
Right.
Which is curious.
Right. Or bad writing. Hey, I'll always fall back on the bad writing. And there we go. We have... See, now they have the cameras.
It's interesting that they have video and power.
Now they have the cameras. Yeah. See, you can already tell that Mendez is basically a better soul than Culp is.
Now, this is interesting in that they're worried about being there for minutes, and these guys are talking about having been there for years, and right. we're still active.
Right. Well,
they're mutating, though. Like, well, but flesh is falling off their faces.
That's the thing with radiation, is radiation doesn't really mutate you. Well, I guess maybe very, very low grade, but usually what it'll do is it'll poison you, and you'll die.
Yeah,
and
it just burns your cells.
But clearly these are the few people who could live through that. You know,
well, I guess my argument,
the roaches of society.
My argument is, can humans live through low level radiation like they're suggesting here? I mean, I'm talking about science now, and actually, quote unquote, mutate like they're mutating, or is that just kind of an a fabrication?
That's a fabrication
because radiation will ultimately kill you.
Yes, it will. It just burns your cells.
There's more to it than that. Like maybe these bombs.
Well, look at her go. Okay.
Maybe these bombs they detonated had some other sort of atomic structure than we know of. So maybe there is also radiation, but maybe something else is also being leaked that is counteracting the radiation and not letting it kill them and also mutating them at the same time.
That's what I got.
There you go.
Because the science at this time is different than our science, you know? They have cigarettes that don't give you cancer.
Well, they did.
That's true.
Before the bomb.
Right.
Now the cigarettes probably give you cancer.
Probably now. But now maybe they're immune to it because they mutated. See?
Oh, look, the video is...
is in film cans.
On 35 millimeter rolls.
Well, it is from the 1970s.
No, it's not. It's from 1991.
No, the interviews
were... interviews are from the 70s.
From the 70s.
Oh, all right. You're right.
Now, we're also going to go ahead and attack a little bit of how they present the canon in... Recapping, Planet of the Apes, it was the date that they were in was 3975. Then in Beneath, I think they said, oh, no, the year is 3955.
Yeah, 3955.
Or in Escape, they reconfirmed it was 3955.
Escape, yeah.
And here they say it's 3950. Sloppy, sloppy, sloppy.
It's just ridiculous because they're just numbers. Couldn't they look this up?
I know. You would think they could just watch the film.
But remember, this is all before the internet.
But these
are the same people who were making the films. Couldn't they keep the dates straight?
No.
Well, apparently their drinking was getting really bad.
Hey, they were mutating.
Yeah. It's
like, hey, George, what year did we have in the film? Oh, 3950. Yeah, okay, fine. Okay.
Yeah. who's our script supervisor?
Now you see Mendez here. Now we have 12 years. We know it's 12 years, and he is the peacemaker. Oh, great shot of Culp.
It's just a latex buildup he's got on his cheeks.
That's
nice. Aww.
And Kim Hunter makes her money.
Yep.
And Eric Braid makes his money, too.
Oh, still frame.
I guess, I like it better in a way.
Is that a split diopter shot?
That was a split diopter shot. That's very good. 50, see? Ah.
She did say that, though.
She said 3950 something.
Oh, yeah. They cut that.
They left because she was drunk.
Yeah. And Grape Juice Plus.
And Grape Juice Plus.
I remember that scene in Escape, and I don't remember a camera being there.
There wasn't.
No, Hessline was taping it.
No, these pictures are from the other interview that they did.
No, that was...
But she was drinking.
That's a picture from when she was drinking. They were being sloppy. Now, that is from the interview in the office. You're correct.
Why are they...
I look like
why
him.
Are they
I
doing
like
that with the still frames, I wonder?
They didn't want to use footage, and I think it's a smart idea just to make I don't know. I think it works.
I don't
one
know why I
other.
Think it's smart, but I do.
I like it. So now it's 3950, and they're off by 25 years. Oh, this is where Virgil explains that about the multiple future possibilities. Which actually, Heidi, with what you've been mentioning, actually, it's a more of a correct way if you're going to talk about time travel that. When Cornelius and Zira did go back,
they changed
the timeline.
Time, yeah.
And so that way, it is possible to change the timeline still.
Right.
Wait, we're getting the thing about if you look at a painting and someone's painting the painting.
No.
If someone's painting the painting of the painting.
What was that called? Something regression?
It's the infinite regression.
The theory of infinite regression.
And now here we have...
We're getting hit with another theory.
Now basically we have the whole... It's a motorway and you can change lanes. Uh-oh. Oh, because they don't even know there's anyone in the city.
Right. We know you're here, but you don't know we're here.
Now the camera moves, and now it's like, oh, yeah, the Caesar knows the gig's up. Okay, Virgil just shot the gun.
Virgil gets,
I would have expected Caesar or McDonald, but Virgil
gets all Rambo on it.
Could have knocked it down, but apparently that would have been...
Either that or Virgil panicked.
Nice shooting, Tix.
I think he panicked.
Way to go, buddy. Now knows we are here, too. I got to say, Paul Williams did a... This is his first... acting gig. He did it under a ton of makeup, and he's incredible.
Yeah, he's really
good. I wonder how old he was.
I will find out.
Look at his film work, because he did a film, it's a comedy, and what's the name of it? And he's very hilarious in it, but he did it before this movie. It's a black and white film.
Well, you know, he's a songwriter, and he's written some famous songs that made a lot of money.
He's also in charge of the music.
It's a comedy with a bunch of stars in it.
Of course he wrote the music for the Muppet movie.
Yes, that's when we were discussing him.
It was a very subversive picture about a funeral parlor and...
Since they got by you.
Killed him. He's great in this.
He is great. He really is crazy. See, he's actually a little bit more of a threatening villain, bad guy, because he's kind of complex and you don't know where he's coming from. You know, he's unpredictable.
Which kind of was in Conquest also. And he was really the threatening one. Breck wasn't unpredictable.
You knew where he was coming from. And I didn't really back it up. He had like this simplistic, idea of the way he was going to go about things. And that's just the way he went about
them. Yeah. He wanted the ape killed, but. This one was like,
electrocute him now.
Right.
You have him hooked up. Why don't you do that? Yeah. Oh, no, he's great. And now they're seeing everyone in the city. Yeah. So basically, I just checked and.
Yep. The Loved One. That's the movie I was thinking about with Paul Williams. It's Jonathan Winters is in it, I think. Rod Steiger is in it. It's a very subversive comedy. Paul Williams was very good in it.
This is a little odd.
Why?
Well, previously they had sort of intimated or made it seem like they knew where everyone was, and that if anyone set off any of these alarms, it would be, an outsider. But now we clearly have all these other creatures, other people around.
But they have orders. Look, they're trying to capture them. Yeah. So they were part of their... I don't know.
Something's going on.
He was born in 1940. So lasers. This would have made him 32.
Wow.
But he'd been a songwriter before, and he had a few things. But still, for his first big role like this,
no, he's killing it actually. And I think he really looks a lot like his ape self, like even like the hair and everything. Well, it's like really or his
He's actually a really short guy.
His chimp self.
I've got a friend who's friends with him, and he looks like a little he's a little guy, and apparently he's really funny when he's drunk too.
A little bit of trivia.
Oh, sorry about that, Mr. Williams.
He always seemed to have a very...
Well, there's nothing to be sorry about. It's nice if you can say someone's nice when they're drunk.
I know. He's funny.
He's actually a really angry little drunk. Really mean.
That would be bad.
That would be bad.
Is this a chase scene in a Planet of the Apes movie?
But weird. But you know what? It's a different location. They did it in a factory, and I think they're doing it well. It's not second unit stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's actually, like, ups and downs and ebbs and flows of this chase.
There's a structure to this chase.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
And Caesar's going to have... Oh, it's water. Caesar, ever the pacifist.
Is he?
Why did they bring the guns?
Well, to protect themselves. Rightfully so. And he's enjoying this. Look at that. He's working the makeup.
Yeah.
Damn.
Good thing that human's here to move that heavy metal plate. That's not like right. one of the apes could have done that.
Right, of course.
Well,
definitely.
He was there.
Definitely not Virgil.
Because he's the small ape.
He's the intellectual.
He's the orangutan. I used to call it a Norrenjuten. That's how he read to me. I'm like, Orangutan? No, orangutan. Oh, okay, all right. And I thought it was orangutan for a long time.
Me too.
I did too.
I still say it that way.
Orangutan.
Don't mock me.
It sounds better that way.
I'd like to order some orangutan, please. That split diopter.
Which flavor?
Drink that the spacemen drink.
That was a good, that the space apes drink. That was actually a good split diopter shot before with Virgil. Oh, that was nice. Yeah, no, with Caesar, that's mm-hmm. right. Actually, Richard Klein did a nice job with this.
Yeah, they're playing the scene pretty well.
Look at this.
That's
this a is nice all, camera angle.
It's all the Dutch tilt on a dolly going backwards around a corner, two corners.
You think we're on a dolly?
Look, this is all
I'm
Dutch.
Suspense.
Yeah, that was a dolly of some sort.
It's better than being verklempt.
Yeah.
But look, this is all in a Dutch tilt, and now it's still.
The look world has been put on edge.
Get out. You're running out of time. Oh. You're going to get poisoned.
Yeah, if you all don't know what a Dutch tilt is out there, look it up.
Because we aren't going to tell you.
Or split diopter.
It's them technical terms.
You know, when they're close up on the ruins of the city, I actually think that the art direction's done pretty well.
I like, the meltiness of
it.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah. I like the car.
It's just a good idea, you know. Of course, I mean, you think if a big bomb went off, that it would just kind of melt. I like that. I like that.
Yeah. I love Severn Darn, man. That's another split diopter shot. It's very nice. Look at that. I really like the. Ooh.
And he's making his
caves
look like caves. His interiors are nice with all the darkness there.
So Mendez is basically, he's the good soul. He's saying there can be a future. And meanwhile, Colt is like paranoid beyond belief. And there you go.
Oh, another bad decision.
Oh, yeah.
Culp.
Now, that's a nice shot.
Now, that's a bad guy. That's
great. He's not good.
Yep.
But he's a good bad guy.
Yeah, he really does it well.
It's nice to see his metamorphosis from Conquest to this movie.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I got to tell you, he's 43 minutes in. And my attention is still held. This is holding up for me. This is good.
Huh.
Oh, wait. I have to go. Oh. I can't watch anymore.
This was the breaking point, right, Heidi, at this point?
We should call your sister.
when they left the city, that's when she said, I'm out of here.
Like, I don't know what's going on with
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I want more of the city, actually. I'm tired of Malibu Ranch.
Ooh.
I like it when they're out in the wilderness better.
Look at that. Caesar's just staring him down.
He's not afraid.
He's not afraid of him at all. Okay.
Aw. I remember this really well.
The kids playing.
Yep. I remember this so well.
Are they playing guns?
They're playing war, yeah.
Yeah. You know what kids do.
Come on. Don't you remember we used to play war? That's what we used to do.
This little kid is awesome. Who is this kid?
Please stand by.
But it is a game.
He's got a great voice. His name is Bobby Porter.
Bobby Porter.
Bobby.
He's doing a great job. But I like that. I like that as a scene. The kids around, just do what kids do.
Turn around and look at the picture of him.
That's awesome.
All Film Grok listeners, this is an order from Heidi Hilliker. Go to IMDb and look up Bobby Porter right now. If you do not see this picture, you are missing out on life.
Oh, man. Look at that.
Whoa. Look, what is that?
He's in something else. Look, what is that? I knew he looked
like
familiar.
He's not like a Gelfling or something, is he?
I'm checking to see what he was in.
Fairy Tale Theater.
Oh, Fairy Tale Theater. I've seen every Fairy Tale Theater. I have them all on DVD. I love that.
Oh, well, you know what? It looks like he was a stuntman. He was actually a stunt coordinator.
Really?
Oh. Get it, Bobby.
And a stuntman, yeah. Did stunts for a whole bunch of stuff. Land of the Lost, he was stunt coordinator. The Wonder Years.
He was but I like his acting.
Land of the Lost, stunt coordinator.
Chaka had a lot of stunts.
There's a lot of stunts in there. What are you talking about?
Ooh, Sid and Marty Croft.
Now, getting back to the movie. Now, of course, the mutants are spying on the Ape City. I don't know if it's called Ape City quite yet, but I just think it's cool.
While I look this up.
So in continuity, they're not in the same place. They're not in New York.
They're not in New York, yes.
No.
You're correct.
They're still outside of the former city they were captured.
Right, which we don't know what it was.
Right.
Well, we know it was Century City, but...
No, it wasn't. Like a throne.
Yep.
So let's see. He did. Now they can see everything. They see the throne. They see. Oh, that's right. Because they're going to have the meeting, and they're spying on their meeting. So let's see. He was in the show Emergency. A few episodes.
Extraordinary.
The TV series Quark. If you all remember that,
Richard Benjamin.
Nice.
Yeah. Fairy Tale Theater. He's in the Goblin.
Yep.
He played in the Snow Queen and the Nightingale.
Yep. The Snow Queen's the best one. Oh, the Nightingale's good, too. Mick Jagger is in that.
Oh, and he was in Land of the Lost. He played Stink. Stink? You know, I don't remember Stink.
I remember Stink.
It says Stink.
Right, I think he's one of those creatures that wears, like, makeup. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Chaka?
Oh, I'm sorry, this is the 1991 version of Land of the Lost.
Right.
So it looks like he did mostly...
You mean the feature film. I'm sorry, I thought you meant the...
No, there was a TV series. They did a second Land of the Lost TV series. It didn't last very long.
Yeah, it was syndicated.
Yes.
Oh.
I saw that. The
feature film wasn't... It was much more recent.
He did...
2006.
Right,
Yeah, we've forgotten already. Oh, No Humans in Council, that's interesting.
Oh, come on, Caesar. Let him in. And let him have some shoes.
Oh, no, Caesar does. Okay, this is a little lame. I get the idea. But the idea is really interesting, that the gorillas would not, you know, that they're so... separatist in a way. They want to separate themselves so much from the humans.
But they want to separate themselves from the rest of the apes, too. Yeah. I mean, we know that. Yeah. You know.
And they want to basically rule. They set themselves up. Well, because the idea is they're militaristic.
Right.
He's so reasonable.
Okay. He just went A through E. I'm sorry. I think writing could be a little better there. And now we're back to the Dutch tilts, just to point it out to everybody.
I expect the Riddler and the Joker to show up.
Exactly. But it works here.
It does. I think it does.
Totally accept. Now, let's talk France Noon really quickly. She was in several films in the 50s and 60s that were notable.
Was she a... She wasn't in some Bond film, was she?
No.
She was in Hong Kong with Rod Taylor. I think she maybe might have guest starred on that. They just tilted the other direction. That's cool.
Yeah. I think they're actually doing really good cinematography with the underground city part.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is
interesting.
Now, this is the footage. This is the footage they added. This was not in the original release, where you saw the bomb.
Hmm.
Well, I like how they identify it. oh, do you know what that is? Yes, of course. That's our missile.
See? And he doesn't even know what it is. Okay, where's the red crystal? I wonder if they have the Alpha and Omega on the tail fins.
Yeah, I wonder if they do.
Oh. Oh, wow. He tells her to basically set it off.
And again, do they even know what is in the rest of the world?
I'm sorry, what was that?
They don't even know. Yeah, no,
they don't know what's going on in the rest of the world, but yet they're just so ready to just set off this bomb that's going to destroy the planet.
No, but they don't even know that he thinks it's just an atomic bomb.
Where did they get it from then?
Well, Heidi.
Okay, I got to make something up, right?
Yeah, get on that.
If I go back through my materials and research it, I think it was explained at some point that it was created and then stashed away and then kept. Yes.
The DP really likes the split lens.
Look at that foreground mm-hmm. work. It's amazing. And even on her, it's very, very nice.
It is. It actually is nice to see some actual cinematography when I feel like the last two films were kind of...
last three films.
Lacking in that department. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they have been flatter. This is more like the first film.
Yep.
Well, Richard Klein's, he is a first-class cinematographer.
I actually think this little kid is super cute, and I'll tell you why, because he reminds me of the adult Cornelius. Oh. But as like a little child, the way he walks, the way he even like the way he talks a little bit,
mm-hmm.
how he stands up so straight, you know, because Cornelius was a little bit more like that with his long arms and a little bit more like squatty in the legs.
Yes. And then very stiff back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they just basically cut to that. They cut the step part of with the bomb out.
Now, my question is, if they had all this technology at their disposal...
Which technology are we talking about?
Well, they've got cars and radios.
Yes.
And televisions in the city.
Right. Why?
Why are they still there? Why does it seem like nothing's moved forward? And
Because as far as they knew, everything was, you know, for crap everywhere else. And this was
it was all destroyed or it was all run by apes.
And this was the safest place to be, was underground, because here it's protected from all the radiation up above.
Fear.
That too.
Like that whole fear thing.
Yeah.
But it's obviously not protected from the radiation above.
Well, it's not...
Because the Geiger counter didn't start clicking until they got into the city.
But what it was clicking up on above ground, it was clicking.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But it was also clicking more below, even.
You're destroying my argument.
I'm sorry. Sorry. You're right, of course.
Trying. That was a nice shot pushing into Alma and Mendez, and that's important because we now don't see them.
Uh-oh.
For a bit.
Oh, it's Chipmunk. Ricky.
Okay, here's a trivia question. What's Cornelius' squirrel's name?
Ricky.
But Cornelius too.
Cornelius, yeah, that's Cornelius.
Junior.
That's right, Junior.
Well, but he's before Cornelius.
Now, this is why they got him, because he
but
could
he's
actually...
also after.
Time disparity.
Paradox.
Yeah, paradox.
Look at that. Look how this kid moves.
Bobby Porter can scamper trees.
He's awesome.
He's a stuntman.
And I also like this idea that they are introducing here, where even the apes want to have pets.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Ironic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now, of course, what does he do? He stumbles upon...
Oh, yeah, this doesn't go well.
Yeah, this does not go well. We will not spoil this for you, Tim, but it doesn't go well.
He gets his jammies dirty and he gets in trouble.
I know. Oh. I hate when that happens. We said we are the super race. We have the right to lead.
Well, if it's a bunch of gorillas, I don't think it's going to end well.
It never does, no.
Which is sad. I wonder about how like real gorillas feel about this portrayal of them, you know?
We should ask them.
We should, because I just don't think that's very fair.
Whoa. And there goes Bobby.
He's awesome.
Bob, he's I'm watching that.
In makeup.
This guy... This is why he was hired. Other than he was a good actor, he could also swing from one tree. He was probably like, I could swing from that tree. Oh, okay.
He's like, I really am a chimp.
And that was a big, long tracking shot, too.
Yeah.
That can't be good when they're asking for guns or power. Get him a job with the NRA.
So we're going to go to the little old man doesn't have any muscle.
That's right.
But has all the guns.
And just say, give us the guns. And he'll say no and we'll take them. What does this teach us?
Uh-oh.
Twig snaps. That's a nice shot. Look at all those gorillas.
And their makeup actually doesn't look so bad.
And it's in the dark. He shoots the night very well.
Firelight.
Nice. Okay. That look was really lame, but...
Yeah.
And that...
And he overheard every word.
Richard Klein's just doing an outstanding job here.
I'm not going to hurt you.
Don't come down.
Now, what's interesting is we've seen his bayonet before, and now he's pulled it out again. Oh, this cannot be good.
And you don't go up a tree to get away from a monkey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think...
Well, he's going where he can. That's the whole thing. You know, I'm watching this, and it's just, I remember, and I'm looking at it, and it's like I'm watching another Planet of the Apes film, and I like it. You know, it's not beneath. It's not in the modern world. It's in the ape world with the ape costumes,
I
like that.
Me too.
And you know what? It's not lame like... I'm really thinking Beneath was kind of lame. I didn't think Beneath was that lame. And this is actually a lot better.
Yeah, it's a lot better.
Now, Bobby, being the stuntman, I think he's got a good chance here of getting away from the...
That's what I'm thinking.
This particular actor.
This Claude Akins guy.
Yes, this...
This trucker. Yeah, the trucker gorilla.
Trucker gorilla is not going to get the stunt boy.
There's Natalie Trundy again.
She can't smell him.
Work the nose.
Oh, you're right. She can't smell him. Yeah.
Where is he?
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. This is... And now they think of the consequences. And like...
There's a rule number one.
What's that?
Ape shall not kill ape.
Ape shall never kill ape.
Oh,
and that's
what
it says. Ape shall never kill ape.
A lot of snapping twigs.
And a lot of grunting, too.
Now,
it's really sad.
She probably could smell them.
I remember, Phil have left. I remember seeing this. I was like, you got to be kidding. You didn't really do that. I didn't believe that they had actually done that.
Had killed that character off?
Have him fall out of the tree like that. I mean, basically, we don't know if he's dead yet. I mean, that was shocking. It's like,
what was that guy doing in that car?
Did you just do that to Caesar's son? Wow. I mean, that actually is good writing because it takes us in a direction we didn't expect.
Right. That's true.
Rose. And it's still believable. Okay, that guy's smiling too much.
These guys see the world through rose-colored...
This is very Mad Max looking right now.
Yeah, this has George Miller written all over it.
This is Mad Max before. This is like 9 years before. 9 or 10 years before.
I wonder if, you know, that was any sort of inspiration.
I did too.
Dear George Miller.
I expect Tina Turner to.
Tina.
And you see this.
Jump
it's,
in
it's,
any
it's
second.
McDonald. McDonald's going to be the detective. The human's going to figure it out.
Now, this is a soundstage.
You know what I was going to say before? That didn't look. It didn't look like a very good location.
It looked better at night.
It looked much better at night.
Now, if he can grab that branch, then he didn't fall that far. Oh.
What? No, there he sees.
Well, it's the bottom part of it. See, look how long the branch was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was huge.
Well, it's taller than him. If you saw him pull it down.
Look at that. You can see where it was cut, where it was hacked. And that's Julie?
Yeah.
The poor humans.
Thank you very much, Julie.
That's right.
You can go now.
Yes, mistress. Oh, man.
See, I understand why my sister was just like, I can't take this anymore. It's just like too much.
Oof, what is going on in that makeup?
It's an older guy.
Those wrinkles.
Around the edges.
You do have old chimpanzees.
Oh.
Okay, now here's one thing, is the village, Heidi, is lacking a doctor.
Looks like they are.
Yes, they are.
That's not part of my plan.
You see?
I like
Caesar
the
and I clearly weren't on the same page here.
This is we're seeing Caesar's soul here. starting to crumble.
Oh yeah, well this is definitely a turning point. Look at that.
I do feel like I'm watching one of the TV shows, because the TV shows, this is the same environment as everything that was in all the TV shows.
Yeah, basically.
Well, exactly. By this point, they might have said, hey, we're going to do a series.
No.
Don't strike those sets.
Oh, well, maybe. But I think it might have been the other way around. They did the movie, and then they said, we'll do that. But the whole dusty roads, no buildings type of thing. Though in the series, they did move towards the, I guess she's the pseudo-doctor or nurse. And she's
very out of focus.
Yeah.
Well, because she's the human.
Right, she doesn't matter.
See, even now they push in and it's still, and it's Natalie Trundy. In her contract it says, no one else will be in focus in the same shot as me. Just kidding.
This is a challenge. Riding a motorcycle that slowly is not easy.
Oh, really? Could there be a third wheel?
In this film somewhere, I'm sure.
I don't know, somewhere on the other side. A little training wheel. These guys are definitely tired. It's like, oh, do we have to cross the desert? Really?
Well,
do I have to do this?
Yeah, we're
I'm a mutant.
And we're falling apart.
What do they eat,
I want to mutate. Look at this.
What do they eat? Maybe they just eat the radiation.
Three of them just dropped. Look at this.
The whole army's going
Reasons
down.
Reasons why they never left the city. They just couldn't sustain themselves long enough.
And look at Culp still like, I'm riding in this.
I mean, maybe some they sent out some recon teams and they never came back. So they were like, oh, we're never going to leave.
Oh, that could be. There you go. Yeah. Look at you doing it again.
Yep. See?
You're good like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, could they have ADR'd it just a little better? I don't know. I like oh, man. Ooh.
It's awkward.
And he's just sitting there like, whatevs.
And what's he do? It's like, you know what? Fuck you guys. Here's your mutant. Wow.
And roll back.
Yeah, that's an argument for not letting the gorillas be in charge.
Well, it wasn't at all subtle.
Yeah, he wasn't subtle.
I stabbed him.
Yep. He's just recapping.
What did you do?
I stabbed him.
These are gorilla mimes.
Okay, the miming is better than
Shields
the ADR.
Shields in your
Yeah, gorilla. It is. The miming is better than the ADR.
Oh, ADR, folks, is automatic
dialogue. That's hilarious.
I see. That's what happens when you stab a mutant. You get blowed up.
Did you see which way he was looking and which way the gun was pointing?
I ignored it.
All right.
I know. But I still like Severn Darden, so we get the excuse.
He gets a pass.
Oh, that's right. One of them survives getting blowed up.
He got blowed up real good.
That was pretty nasty. That's some artillery they got. So how are you liking it so far, Tim?
Like I said, I feel like I'm watching one of the TV episodes.
Yeah. Okay.
I sort of get into the story better of Conquest than the story here.
Oh.
I think this is, I'm appreciating the cinematography more in Battle.
I'm appreciating the story more than I have before. And, in terms of the TV series, I don't know. I guess I should go back and watch some of the TV series if I really have to. I just think this is far superior.
As far as production and
story.
Yes, but... And story, because, like I said, the TV series I remember just being one long chase scene.
Yeah.
But I think it's all this Malibu Ranch stuff.
Okay.
That's, well,
in terms of
to
location,
me, is equating it to the TV series.
Ooh, and all those sets himself
in the throne.
Up in the throne.
And
Caesar's
says Caesar's not here.
Yeah. And basically takes over, and I think this is where they...
These humans kind of look like hippies anyway.
I know, they're really passive.
The humans are very passive.
Oh, you see, this can't go well.
What? I was playing with my human...
Get a haircut, human.
This is just... None of this is good.
Aww.
That's the guy from the beginning.
Yeah, the guy who couldn't lift the cart.
Yeah.
Oh, she's in her jammies.
Yeah, they're all in jumpsuits, which I love. P.S. In my post-apocalyptic world, we will all wear jumpsuits.
Do we have to?
Yes.
I don't want to wear a jumpsuit.
Why not? They're fun.
Have you ever heard of Forever Lazy?
Because they ride up your butt.
No.
There is a jumpsuit that's called Forever Lazy made of fleece. It's like footy pajamas.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
You can go.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think we need something that's like canvas, maybe.
I'm just thinking maybe for you.
Just for around the house.
Yeah, around the house.
That was
for
a great shot where he...
It was a rack focus.
Yeah, nice rack focus. Oh, nice. Look at that close-up on him. And here's Luer's second scene.
Mm-hmm.
He did it all in one night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or maybe two nights. But likely one. Hmm. I like how they lay out, basically, you know, they argue out and they lay out their social structure and they try and stick with it as much as they can.
Yeah.
And they've done that already. And Aldo is still, as opposed to just going in there and doing it, he's still trying to reason it that this has to be, you know, for order. I mean, Aldo still wants order, the wrong kind.
Right.
That's just wood, right? I mean, they could...
And now it becomes a coup.
And they do.
Now, yeah, before, basically it becomes a coup, now it is a coup. He's upending the whole social, the whole political order. Culp is a rise, like, I'm here.
Everything about him is funny to me. The way he's dressed, the way he walks.
Yep.
This guy standing next to him.
Yeah, those goggles.
Yeah, he just wants to kill everybody.
Look at this, fanatics. But you get him, you know, you get Culp up against Aldo, you know, two fanatics.
You know, that's true. And then you have, because the idea is that Mendez is like Caesar.
Right.
Only we don't see their story, we're seeing Caesar's story.
Right.
Yeah, actually, I like it.
Couple of flame bombs.
But it is the kind of things about, you know, like, you know, when I was talking about how my sister and I watched all these movies in one day and it was so exhausting, it's just... It's because these movies just keep on pushing in your face the fact that, like, we're all so flawed, or, you know, like, and whether or not we're, like, people or apes or whatever, that we just keep on the cycle of just doing, like, bad things to each other over and over and over again, and no lesson is learned.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
There's a lot of devaluing of life.
Right.
It's a lot of devaluing going on.
Well, and remember, these came out 1 year apart, so you could take, you know, if you gave the message 1 year apart, it's easier than essentially getting it, you know, 2 hours.
Right,
every 2 hours.
But still, in general, I mean, the message these movies are sending is that, you know, that there's just badness and it's a cycle.
Well, I think once a year you should be reminded of that.
But that's what it was in the, you know, late 60s, early 70s. And also we were in the Cold War too.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, regardless of the social changes, I mean, it was that, you know, it was mutually assured destruction. Are the Russians going to bomb up? You know, we have to be equally able to bomb each other so that we don't bomb each other.
Right.
And they called it mutually assured destruction. It was called MAD.
And I wonder if that's...
But it worked. I mean, clearly, I mean, there were some close calls, but it kept everything at bay. But there was still the whole thing of... I mean, Dr. Strangelove is all about that, too.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
I mean, I think it's always the best example to go to is Dr. Strangelove for the insanity.
But yeah, it's so wonderful, though.
Well, because it's funny, because it's like it's ludicrous.
It's
but
ludicrous.
There's a point.
But there is a point.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that there are people who think you can beat the impossible.
I got to give, you know, kudos to the franchise that it stuck to its visionary guns to where, as far as the overall mood and statement and truth to its state, you know, vision was kept through all the installments of the films.
Yeah.
Right.
They didn't, you know, pull any punches.
Now, going back to my thesis that I stated at the beginning, wondering about Caesar. I mean, maybe I'll see once in a few minutes what happens. But I'm feeling like I'm not seeing enough Caesar in this film.
Me too.
Yeah.
I feel like I wanted to see more of him. Before it was just like for a few sequences of Caesar. But here, for some reason, we've spent so much time away in the way or the kind of time away, but actually in the context of the story it works, because he's basically neglecting his duties as a leader. He's staying by his son's side right now, who is clearly not doing well.
But I'm definitely not getting my quota of Roddy McDowall.
Now, the makeup looks really good there. Only right. I'm not
well,
there.
Basically, Cornelius has just died.
Yeah.
So, and, oh, wow, look at
and his, he did tell him that it wasn't the humans.
Yeah, and so he knows.
Yeah. That's really sad.
Yeah.
I'm feeling kind of sad. Bummed out about this right now.
Wow, well, look
he
at,
was
look
a great
at,
kid, man.
Look at, that, look that, at the tear on the makeup. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Roddy McDowall, too.
Because, and the thing that's really sad about that moment is, like, Cornelius, I mean, from the second this film starts, is, like, kind of like the hope of the future, you know? Like,
yep.
He's going to be the next leader, and he's fair, and he likes the humans.
Yeah, and he draws you in.
Right.
And he's going to be the son of Caesar. He will be the next one.
Right.
Right.
And actually, what in the writing that's really good about it is now they're basically saying, Caesar's son is dead. There will be no peace. It's all going to go to shit.
Right. We lost our future.
We've lost. And yeah. And then it's in the context of everything now that all this stuff happens. I love Culp. Onward. Go. He must have had a blast. And it's like, and here Caesar is just paralyzed. He's not leading. He is stuck. Oh, ooh, nice cut.
Yeah.
That was a nice cut.
Yeah, that was.
It was a very nice cut.
It was a very, that was a great transition. There's some really nice, fine film craft in this. I'm liking this film.
Yeah, I like it.
I'm thinking
Benny. And that's a nice shot.
Claude Aiken steps into
Green
the pool.
Brown, dolly yeah. back.
Yep, I think Beneath is the stinker of the series now. I never thought I would have said that. But
you know, next time you watch all these movies again, you'll change your mind.
It's going to change, of course. I'm going to change my mind. But that's what makes it wonderful. I like how Aldo is still saying, I'm rationalizing this. I rationalize it. It's amazing that he's able to stand down Aldo. I mean, that's what I'm amazed at. He's able to stand Aldo down, and now...
Yeah, and you brought it here.
He was working that makeup there really well.
It was Caesar and Virgil that did it. It's all Virgil's fault. He shouldn't have shot the camera.
Yep.
See, Virgil?
Run, humans.
Oh,
well, they can't. They're
they
stuck
can't.
In the pen.
Let them out.
And they're keeping them in the pen.
Oh.
And this is just war for war's sake. I'm going to wipe you out because you are the enemy for nothing else.
For nothing, for you know what though, it's like when you don't know what your future is going to be, you don't think you're really going to have one. And I mean, they're probably just doing this to do something, you know, to feel like alive and feel like they're making a difference in the world.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, he's doing
talking about the humans or the
the humans.
Oh, yeah.
They were complaining about it being boring.
Boring, yeah,
that's
yeah.
right.
It's not boring now.
Now it's not boring now.
That's right. I mean, I could see
nice
attacking them for resources.
Nice shafts. I don't know if that's
lots of apes. I like that.
I don't know if that's a real good justification for starting a war, though.
Well, I don't know either, I think that's motivation.
I think it was basically after vengeance. It's just they came into our city. They want to... Well, he's paranoid, first of all.
Well, right.
And they clearly established... And he thinks... He's saying, they want to exterminate us. We're going to exterminate them.
Right.
Basically. You know, they rose up against us. Caused all this destruction, then I destroy
them.
Stop
the violence.
Well, that's what Mendez was saying, and that's what Caesar essentially is trying to.
Right.
And Cornelius were trying to.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. What are they carrying? Just furniture?
Stuff to put in the way.
How cool that you can have control over a location like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have to worry about any distractions to their filming.
It's a way to make a film. All right, a lot of smoke pots. Okay, now we're getting Caesar shooting his gun. Here comes Paul Williams with his gun, too. Oh, man.
Well, I wonder how much makeup repair had to be done for these scenes.
Mm.
A lot of talent actors wrecking their appliances doing these scenes.
Well, probably most of them didn't have appliances.
It's probably,
a lot of rubber masks.
As far
masks.
As the mask, yeah. But you're foreground people. You're, you know...
Well, they're keeping a lot of people out of the foreground.
And the smoke helps a lot.
Yes.
Oh, yes. More smoke. I don't want to see the apes. I don't want to see detail.
Uh-oh.
Nice.
Oh, what's that?
Goodness.
Oh, they're laying a smoke screen.
What? They're walking?
They're walking through the smoke screen. Hmm.
The Partridge Family.
Oh, in case we didn't know they were coming. Okay, yeah. Bad dialogue. Oh, all right, that's the first bad dialogue we've had in the film. All right.
Here they come.
They're here.
Really?
I remember that. That was one thing, is the trees blowing up. I distinctly remember. Okay, now we're into a lot of second unitary.
Yeah, this would be a fun day to be an ape extra, mm-hmm. for sure.
Oh, that was a bad mask.
That was a bad mask.
Okay, this gets back to my whole underdirected. Now we're just getting shots and angles and shooting and shooting and no structure to it.
You start detaching after a while.
Well, that's the thing. That's why you got to construct these sequences well, as opposed to just repeating and going for anything. Not going for anything, but still. We've been on that shot like at least 3, 4, 5 times.
Right. Like, is the bus ever going to make it there?
Yeah. And now we're seeing explosions.
I'm really worried about Lisa up in the treehouse. Yeah, it looks like all the treehouses are exploding.
Well, they're all vulnerable. The thing is, they're all vulnerable.
Well, I think everything's vulnerable.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're all. So, all right. Okay. Enough. Do something.
Yeah, please.
Oh. Yeah. It's very loud. Okay. Now we have some more structure to it. He's saying fallbacks. I guess.
Aren't you in the village?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Aren't.
They're 30 feet out of the village, though.
Oh, my God. They just had a shot of a person in a horrible mask.
Very bad. You saw the eyes.
Yep. The eyes and the mouth are like the two worst things about the masks. They have no eyeballs, and their mouths gape open.
Maybe it was a blind orangutan.
Maybe it was a blind orangutan.
He had no eyes.
And a dislocated jaw. It just hangs there.
I mean, you have to remember, too, this is a relatively short film, so maybe that's why they extended this.
Well, it's feeling long right now.
It's feeling
really long. And after watching all the other ape movies, watching all the other, drawn on out scenes, I don't know how much more I can take.
I was about to ask you, is this the extended stuff that wasn't done for the TV? Okay.
No, I think this was the way it was. The extended stuff was like the bomb stuff in Mutant City.
All I've been thinking is I hope the Partridge Family gets their gig, because that bus has been driving very slowly trying to get
yeah. Right. I mean, what is that bus running on? Like batteries?
Seriously, where'd they get the gas?
I think it's running on batteries.
See, that's
like my power wheels went at like that pace.
Oh my God.
Well, this is why they killed the motorcycle rider, because he couldn't ride slowly. Oh no, wait,
yeah,
there are more.
This sequence,
right as I say it.
The sequence itself was a fine idea, but the execution of it has sunk the movie.
Well, what they did is they shot footage.
I like this. The subtitle just came on and said no audible dialogue.
It says nothing left alive. Yeah, which we get. But just that whole part was just unstructured enough to sink it. But now I'm back into it. Yeah, Cornelius is just in.
Now her makeup looks very nice.
Yeah, well, she's Arthur P. Jacobs' wife. Her makeup's going to look awesome.
She gets the... Yeah, first chair makeup.
She gets, right after Roddy McDowell.
But his doesn't look good.
I honestly think that maybe they were trying to age him. And it ended up just not looking well.
The appliance didn't go far enough into the hairpiece.
Right, but almost maybe they're trying to give him like an older furrow brow.
Okay.
And then it just doesn't work.
They were trying to thin it so he could get more expression out of the forehead, it just isn't working.
They could have cut that sequence down by at least 3 minutes and then gotten to this shot.
Man, if I was in either one of these armies, I would have been like past the other one by the time this all happened. I would just run.
But now Caesar did say Aldo was coming around. I was expecting Aldo to flank them or something, and we haven't seen Aldo. Aldo's like disappeared.
Well, what he said was they're probably on the other side of the valley by now, meaning they split.
That's what I was thinking.
Cowards.
Yeah, that they left them.
Yeah.
Cowards.
Well, because Aldo wants all of them to die.
Well.
Kind of.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I've forgotten a lot of this stuff already. Oh, now I remember. Okay. I remember what this is. Oh, he remembers him. I don't like the lighting on the on Culp right there. But I like
imagine
the speech.
How exhausting, I mean, these films are. Your early morning call, your makeup, and then you're on location like this for the whole day.
But kind of fun.
Well, but this film, like I said, well, this is on the set. This is on stage.
This is, but that last sequence was
a lot of it,
the Malibu Ranch.
A lot of it was all at the ranch, More so than, well, probably like Planet of the Apes was. Oh, Julie. Oh, wow. I didn't like that zoom. But this is very cool. They're tracking shots. I really like the tie back to Conquest there.
Yeah.
With Culp and him.
Does she...
Nice.
Oh, wait. Where'd the
car come from? Now Fight Like Apes.
Yeah.
This is where we cheered.
Yeah. I would cheer here.
Now I remember.
This was with Dean. I saw this Dean.
See? Nets and knives. That's all you need.
Nets are good.
Nets and knives.
Nets are always important. See? They did have a plan. They were they're like the Ewoks.
Yes. Which we all know was a winning,
But smarter.
It worked for Lucas, but you know what? Planet of the Apes did it first.
Oh, that was the same shot.
You know, these movies are pretty good about, like, giving you some unexpected turn of events towards the end.
Mm-hmm. See, he says, no killing. No, the story for this one, actually, it needed to be a little fuller, but it's actually pretty good. Oh, now I remember what happens. Yeah, that's right.
Does he make the radio call? Don't tell me.
Shoot the tires. Shoot the tires.
I don't remember. I know. Come on.
God's sake. Shoot the tires.
But he says.
They don't know this yet. They don't understand.
Well, I love how they're just riding out peacefully away.
But this is part of what Caesar's about. He's like, let them go in peace. I don't know if he's right or not, but that's what
he's about. I just think he doesn't know about shooting the
tires. Are those nylon ropes? There seems to be a lot of melting.
Well.
Oh, Virgil.
He's letting them retreat. But you know what happens? Then the cowards wait, who say no prisoners. So the point is, do you take prisoners? Do you let them go? Or do you do what these guys do, which is...
Slaughter.
Slaughter them, yeah.
Listen, if they would have just shot the dang tires, they could have taken them all as prisoners.
But they didn't want them as prisoners. It's a pain in the butt.
Circling the bus with...
But that's a great image.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It is.
And what do? They kill all the humans. And where's Culp? We gotta see Culp get his.
Yeah, it's
It's very brutal. Very, very brutal.
You're missing, exchanges between characters, and it's all just been action this as far as, this
happened. For like the last 30
minutes. Cause and effect of visual stuff happening.
Well, but right, I mean, this sequence is constructed for me, and I'm getting it. And now we have the consequence. We didn't have to see a big moment, Culp gets it, in the head. It was incidental. Actually, I like how this was constructed because it all focuses on Aldo now, on the ape point of view, that basically this is their attitude. There's no prisoners.
But I'm missing a connection to the characters that inhabit this world.
Okay.
I'm missing, Roddy McDowell, I'm missing Natalie Trundy, I'm missing who they are and how they're experiencing this.
I think you're going to get a taste of that in a second.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
They were only about 100 yards away from their village. How did they not know that was going on?
They were 200 yards away.
Oh, that's how. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Let the humans out.
Yes. Let's see how that goes. that was good.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
You can hear Cornelius, Caesar whisper from 50 yards away on a horse, but we couldn't hear the gunshots.
Well, he doesn't know they killed them all. Wow. And this is where Caesar lays it down.
So, Serge, do you still feel that this installment is Roddy McDowall's best range of ability to act?
Conquest was. Yep. I
thought you said Battle gave him the best range.
I thought it did. I don't know. Well,
thesis he was putting forward.
I was putting it forward. Well, I think the problem is here. Is well, actually, you know what? The Caesar of this film is different than the Caesar of Conquest.
He's older.
He is older, and he's different. So
yeah, I think
call him out, Virgil.
Yep, exactly.
And
you see, and the other apes are like, what?
Snap!
I think Caesar is much more riveting in Conquest.
And all the gorillas know it's true.
But the story is different.
They lower their guns.
Yeah. The story is different. This story, he's a different part of the story.
Now
here.
There's some nice movement in that makeup.
Oh, he's
around the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's just it's an older Caesar, and look at this. Just look at what he's going through right now.
Yeah, that realization.
And he's trying to reconcile with him. You know, with having, you know, what Aldo has done. And it's interesting because, there's been like six gorillas who were with him, but all the other gorillas are like, you shouldn't have done it.
I wish that was my part. Just that one, you know, just that one line.
Oh, there's Natalie Trundy. Nope. Mm-hmm.
What does he mean?
And here I think it's going on to more of, you know, the animal thing that we talked about. Definitely Caesar's alpha maleness is definitely showing him down. Aldo can't
and
flee
look at
from
McDowell's
it.
Makeup, they came and blend it. I mean, those two different colors.
Yeah, the
colors.
Two colors.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually been on a couple of the makeups. The color blending's been off.
I know, I've noticed it.
But I think they would have noticed. Maybe it's
intentional.
I'm going to go with the intentional thing, that maybe he was aging, and the idea is that maybe his skin was graying as he was aging.
I actually seem to recall someone talking about the fact they were thinning the appliance to get more movement out of it.
Or maybe that's what because the thicker it was, the harder it was. And now look at this. Aldo is... He's terrified of Caesar.
Of course he is. I think it's true. Anytime someone is that aggressive and that violent, it's only because they are terrified of others, or they feel inadequate in some sort of way, and that's their way of acting out.
Right.
Clearly, you know, Aldo has felt that way. Because if he was as strong as he let on, he wouldn't be running away right now.
Right.
He would take it like a man.
I mean, he's strong in strength, but his spirit is not strong at all.
Right, right.
And he was able to take. Well, I don't know. It's just the mindset. And actually, it's interesting that they have this out. Sorry, I'm just going to say it quick. They have this out in a tree. I mean, they're basically going back into the trees where the apes had lived
right before
they became like the humans.
Of course, the gorillas were not arboreal.
Oh, they're not?
No, gorillas are ground dwelling.
Damn, there goes my thesis.
Because
okay.
They're like huge. Like a tree couldn't.
Yeah, they're giant. I mean,
yeah, a tree really couldn't support one.
A big
gorillas
silverback can
huge.
Weigh, I think, like 600 or 700 pounds.
Big trees.
Maybe I'm wrong on that.
Could.
Yeah.
That tree is supporting them right there.
Right, but that guy's not 600 or 700 pounds.
Look at how dead that tree is, by the way.
Yeah.
He's gaining on him.
I'm not really sure what Caesar's expecting here, though.
Oh,
I mean, he doesn't want to he can't really justify killing him.
Oh, I think Caesar is all about killing him right now.
Yeah, I think so a little bit, too. That's his son. That was his future.
So he's becoming really human.
Yeah.
A little more vindictive.
Can you only imagine, I mean, the stuntmen that had to go up in the
tree. Well, and I think he's also, it's not even just so human. I think it's actually very animal.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, Aldo was trying to be the alpha male. He was trying to, like, take over the tribe or, you know, what, I don't even know how apes roll, but I think that that's what it is. It's like the ultimate showdown between the two alpha males.
And here, Aldo has to revert to a weapon of man to try and take him down. Oh, they got that
stage.
On the soundstage, yeah. And there you go. Crunch.
I think he would have preferred to take him down the tree and lock him up.
Absolutely. You can tell he did not take satisfaction in doing that, but it's like, it is what it... So you go. Should one murder be avenged by another? Because remember, in the history that Cornelius said, Aldo was the one who was the first ape to say no.
Right.
And this is back when he said that in Escape.
Yeah.
So, obviously, either warped history, as you said, altered history. And then Aldo became something different. Or the lawgiver changed the story for his purposes.
Maybe.
Because remember, the lawgiver is telling this story.
Hippies.
Here's Abe. Yeah.
Aw, Abe shall not kill Abe. Cute.
Yep. Yes, Caesar.
With love.
Go, Virgil.
Yeah.
Yeah, you tell the truth.
Virgil's got this movie, man.
Yeah, Virgil really does have this movie.
He has it down.
I think between like Virgil and Cornelius, I mean, I feel like they kind of just like took it over.
That was great. Great, like, uh-huh. What's interesting that Caesar set himself up as king. I didn't even think about it until now. That's right. He is a king. He is
monarch. Headgear is very 50s.
And now here, actually, I think they never got the call.
My God, that guy shrank.
Oh, that's...
Oh, no.
Sergeant York? We lost. Oh, that's right, because one guy got it.
What is wrong with that guy?
Well expressed.
The guy's just like, whatever. And they're all these... Uh-oh. That's right. Uh-oh. Don't set off the bomb, Alma. See, this was missing from... This was missing from the end of the movie. The parts with the bomb.
Alpha and Omega bomb.
And he explains it. And he understood it.
Nice.
Mutants in the, 2,000 years from now.
Yes.
Mutants in the 40th century.
Right, and here the religion is born.
Yeah.
I love how they were playing checkers.
I know.
Well, this is definitely...
They're so bored.
They could have been playing chess, but they decided to have them playing checkers.
Right. You were saying, Tim?
There's definitely that one actor scene. I mean, I don't know his name, but he had that one handed to him.
Yeah. And they're collecting all the guns, and everything will be peaceful again. And there's Mandamus.
They should have had extras, shouldn't they?
That's right. Huh. He's like, you can live here forever. I don't want to. I want to go do something else.
Wait, 27 years?
Oh, wow. So I guess it's been 20. Does that make sense? I guess.
That so was Caesar's a lot older than...
Caesar, it would make Caesar 47 years old.
Well, yeah. That makes sense.
Wow. And, oh, nice transition to The Lawgiver. Played by John Huston, the famous John Huston. Look him up.
The orangutans have wonderfully full brows.
Yes, he did have a daughter by the name of Angelica, and now it's 600 years later.
Aww.
I like this. Oh, okay, who knows? And he pulls her pigtail.
Ow.
Aww. He really yanked on it, though.
He did.
And now, of course...
And she really pushed him.
And now we go, of course, to the statue of Caesar, which, of course, has disappeared by the 40th century.
And, but maybe not now.
But, well, not by 26, whatever, this is 26. No,
she means now that the timeline's different. Future, you know?
Okay, well, that's true. But, of course, you see Caesar is crying. So we know that it's not quite a hopeful future. But maybe not.
Maybe it's just made out of one of those, like, wet stones that they sometimes make Virgin Marys out of so that they'll cry. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Those, I think we should spread grass seeds all over them.
This is the first movie with music in the end.
Yeah.
They make statues with what stone?
Like, I don't know. I've seen this on, like, the Discovery Channel or whatever.
I'm sorry,
like,
hang on. Jake's friend is John Landis. John Landis was in this?
Could it be the same John Landis?
Maybe John Landis was the guy at the end that goes like that and goes, yeah, I think it is the same John Landis.
No, that guy was black.
Yeah, that guy was...
I saw him in the background. I couldn't really tell. Okay, I'm sorry, Heidi.
Well, I've just heard about, like, you know, sometimes there's, like, the relics, you know, like the Christian relics, and, like, they'll have, like, statues of Virgin Mary that cry and whatever, and it's supposed to, like, symbolize something. Well, I guess there's, like, certain, like, there's, like, stones that, like, secrete water. And
those would be very popular in desert countries.
Not that much water, but
right, yeah, but just like moisture, and that they've been known to make some of these relics out of them because it looks like she's crying, and then
so you're taking a scientific approach to the last shot rather than a poetic approach.
Yeah, I mean, it's sci-fi, right?
I'm taking the more poetic approach.
I still say they should put grass seeds all over it and make them into a chia.
No chias. I'm looking at it as in, you know, it's the final moment. They're saying, yes, it's hopeful, but, you know, it's one of those...
Stay tuned.
It's an impossible moment. It's just like, of course the statue can't cry, but of course the statue cries and cries for what will happen. I don't know. That's kind of the way I saw it.
Well, and who really knows what will happen? I mean, I'm sure we're pretty all... I would say most people would probably think it does go the pessimistic route, and then we end up with the same future where the Earth blows up.
That's where I was going, yeah. Because the Alpha and Omega bomb would wind up in New York, and it would all go that way.
Yeah, how does it get there? Oh, you already know that.
But maybe the future is different, you know, because you see now with the Lawgiver, he's talking to the humans and the apes, and they're on the same level.
Right. And the whole thing with Virgil, sorry, the Virgil did say... The future is like a motorway. You can change lanes. So he did open it up to the idea that it could be different. And I think, yeah, it could possibly be different, but here it's Caesar, you know, whatever, it's the poetic moment, but Caesar is still saying, please don't, you know, don't fuck it up. Please do it right, because you can go wrong so easily, kind of thing.
So I'm going to start the round table here. I shall kick it off. I'm going to say, in order of my preference,
yes,
the films I like the best to least.
In the eight films? We're doing our eight film wrap-up?
Best to least.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. For me, number one, meaning the one I like the most.
Yes.
Planet of the Apes. The next one would be Escape from the Planet of the Apes. The next one would be Conquest. The next one would be Beneath. And the last one would be Battle. That's
Wow.
Awesome.
Interesting.
You didn't hesitate.
But I think I'm pretty close. Okay. Yep. Planet of the Apes. Escape. Escape is just such a great movie. And when we all watched it together, you know, the other day, that it would just, I re-fell in love with that movie. So definitely that's number two. Then I would maybe say that I think it's Battle. Then I think it's Conquest. Then I think it's Beneath. That's my order.
I'm going to be like at a restaurant. I'm going to wait for the last person to go.
Well, I can't.
Okay.
I've not seen all five.
Seen all five?
No, I have seen all five, but not in some time. I wouldn't be speaking from a position of knowledge. Mm-hmm. You all have seen them more recently than I.
Okay. Then I'll go. Planet, of course, is number one. Escape is indeed number two, dropping from, you know, before Conquest used to be number two for a long time. Upon reflection, I think Conquest is number three, Battle number four, Beneath number five.
Now, so that's the same order you had, yes?
Is it?
No, we switched. We switched Conquest and Battle.
You like Battle more than Conquest?
Yeah, I just really like this
Interesting.
Movie.
Interesting. I like this movie too, but I think I gained more of a I've gained more of a an appreciation for Conquest again. It's kind of crept back.
I think. Damn it! The camera work, though.
I don't know.
The editing and camera work in this, I think, were superior.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
It was.
I agree.
And I think, I agree on that. And the story actually is superior to Conquest.
I think I think
Roddy McDowell's, I blame that on the directing and the editing. That's not the script.
Oh, okay.
I'm reacting emotionally. For me, emotionally, I like Conquest better than Battle. I had a bigger emotional connection to Conquest than I did to Battle. That's what sold me to it.
Those two are really hard.
And
I
agree.
Like
Richard Klein's
level.
Cinematography is much more high quality in Battle. Yes,
I agree significantly.
Battle's got a good story, but there's something missing. There's a thinness to it.
Yeah.
That Conquest, while it doesn't have as much of a story, that avoids that. Thinness, even though
a simpler narrative.
The action. This is a little complicated in the narrative.
But they've been able to fill that out.
I think it's a matter of parts and pieces because this movie has got some really great acting.
Oh, yeah.
It's got Caesar, though my thesis does not bear out. I needed more of Caesar in this film. I got more of Caesar in Conquest. But you've got great Paul Williams as Virgil.
You've got Cornelius.
You've got Lou Ayres as Mandamus. And you've got Saren Darden as Culp, who kills it.
Yeah.
He kills it as Culp.
Plus, it's just such a good tie back, you know, into everything else that we already know what's going on. I mean, it is a very nice conclusion to the series of, I don't know, just...
I think it holds up favorably, more favorably than it did, because I remember when it came out and everyone was like, oh, Battle, blah, 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 blah.
I don't know. Conquest is great, too. That's really hard.
Yeah.
Definitely the top two are the top two.
Yes.
Definitely. Definitely, definitely.
We agreed on that.
Planet and Escape.
Planet and Escape.
And each one has its different gifts.
Both Jerry Goldsmith scores.
See, it's a Jerry.
I miss Zira. I mean, I've said that like several times.
We love our Kim Hunter.
I love her. You know, I think she's such a great character. I love her so much. And I do feel like every sequential film that's missing her is missing something.
Right. Though Roddy McDowell did do a great job in taking the franchise and then making it his own in his own way. But
absolutely.
He can't carry the whole thing. There had to be other parts. Yeah, compared to Conquest, I mean, in terms of the additional parts, in Conquest you had Harry Rhodes and you had Saren Darden as Culp, but he wasn't as forward. And then you had Breck. But here you had more comedy. You know, like I really like Virgil. I think Paul Williams just really killed it. He was just really, really, really entertaining. So.
And the armory guy.
Lou Ayres as Mandamus.
Yes. It was just, I liked where, you know, that it's, I mean, now that it's separated by years, but, you know, that they had built this culture and I didn't have to criticize, oh, well, it could have been better or anything. It was what it was. And I don't think of the TV show. I like kind of what they've done and where they were and what they were trying to work out with the humans and with the gorillas and the power structure. And the whole Cornelius story, I just remember the Cornelius aspect really was like, that is so cool. And then him dying was just like, what the fuck? Wow. They did that. They went there. But it was just such a strong element. But there's not enough Caesar.
Because I was all geared up from what you had said, that this was Roddy McDowell's piece de resistance of his acting.
I'm sorry. It built you up so much.
No, I don't know that you were wrong. I mean, but in the previous film, the silence and the acting in the silence, actually, that's a big skill. I mean, and that's acting, you know, you don't have to say anything, but you can still express. That's quite something.
Yeah.
I thought his fervor at the end of Conquest was so impressive.
Yeah.
Fervor to come up from his guts and out finally that you never saw before that.
Well, yeah, because
I never saw it in Battle.
Yep, never seen it.
So I only saw it in Conquest, and it really impressed me.
But you saw some of that here when he said, "You murdered my son." His whole face down with Aldo is pretty incredible too. It's not. I mean,
I was a little distracted by the tree climb. I actually found that distracting. I mean, I understand what the purpose of it was, but
it did find it a little
distracting from the emotion.
It did.
I detached a bit because of that.
They should have wrestled. I'm not kidding. They should have
in Jello.
Yeah.
They should have wrestled right there and literally torn into each other. But I think doing the tree was easier for them to do that as opposed to wrestling.
And it isn't really
because
him
then he didn't
killing.
Have to violently kill him.
Yeah, he's
exactly.
not really.
Exactly.
I mean, although
Abe didn't kill Abe.
A conflict doesn't necessarily mean killing.
Right.
So a good, you know, battling before going into the tree and then the ultimate dying of him would have been probably it probably would have worked.
Yeah.
You know, if they go to the trouble of redoing this, I think they could do a really good job of thickening up Caesar's personal life and thickening up him as a leader, which I think I would have liked to have seen more.
Right.
You know, how he deals with his little assembly of
the society
citizens, mm-hmm. and yeah.
Which was nice. Well, then looking forward to Rise of the Apes now.
Yeah.
Not to distract, we can veer away from this again, but where do they take this in terms of, like, essentially remaking Conquest? And then if there will be a sequel, if it's successful enough, where will they take it? Will they take it in a direction, I mean, obviously they won't remake Battle, but in that same direction of where they, what
right.
do they do next?
Well, and then they could do, like, anything, because without having, you know, the restraints of all the previous ape films, you know, all that information and all of that chronology, they can do whatever they want because they don't have to tie in the bomb.
Yeah,
they don't have to tie in.
They can create a whole new
right.
Like, yeah, they can just
mythology.
Go wherever.
There was a substantial amount of continuity porn, which I thoroughly enjoyed in this film. Absolutely, and like that Alpha and Omega bomb. I'm like, yeah, Mendez. All right. I'm digging it. And then also Culp. It was just, I really was impressed at the end with the whole face-off with Culp and Caesar. And it's like, wait, that was one movie ago. That is so cool. Not as good as Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. But
it was a nice...
But it was...
It was a nice carry-through from Conquest.
That feeling. It's like, wow, this straddles two films, which you never had. You rarely ever have anything like that, you know, successfully, I believe.
Yes.
So. Any last thoughts about apes? Are we all aped out?
I might be getting aped out.
I think it's time to put this baby to bed.
Mm-hmm. It's been fun.
It has been. Well, that's it for the ape films. We're going to move on to other films next time. And I don't think there's ever been a series like this, but we'll see if there's other ones. Though we do have to do some James Bonds at some point, but they're a little different than this.
Now, would you ever consider looking at, like, episodes of the TV series and talking about those, or are they just too hard to get?
Well, this is called Film Grok, so we just concentrate on films.
Yeah.
If we ever do TV stuff, then maybe that would fit into a TV kind of arena.
TV Grok?
I don't know.
Film-related Grok? Okay, just checking.
Peripheral
I'd like to watch
Grok.
Them. I haven't seen them.
It's a world of possibilities. So you actually, I'd say, you know, yeah, go to Netflix, actually. The TV series is easily available, and actually what would be interesting is watch the animated TV series, because what they do is actually it's Planet of the Apes, but in, like, modern day, as opposed to being in, I mean, with buildings and cars and all that kind of thing, which was the original concept for Planet of the Apes, but they couldn't afford it, so they created Ape City, which I think worked much better.
I would like to express my admiration for this franchise, though, and through my life, as far as being a sci-fi addict and fantasy addict and everything, it added immeasurably to my cinema loving ways.
Well, this definitely sculpted my career. I put it right there with Star Wars and you know, Close Encounters and Jaws. I mean, those were just iconic in my life. So
I think it shaped my fragile little mind.
it certainly shaped mine.
And I know Richard Zanuck, who championed the first Planet of the Apes, is the one who really followed through on that and got it produced. So really due to him that this really got off the ground. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zanuck. And Mr. Zanuck was also involved in the Planet of the Apes remake.
Ah.
Are you guys okay with that?
I don't know. I've got to think about that.
I didn't mind
it. It's all right.
I kind of want to watch it now.
The Tim Burton
one? I watched it when it very first came out in the theater, and I was like, yuck, 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 gross.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do another
ape
movie.
You know, actually, it might be worth it to watch it and to kind of have some separation and say, okay, I'm not going to knee-jerk against it and really try and give it a chance.
Right, because I think I saw it that first time, and I was just kind of like, I mean, it started, and right away I was just like, okay.
You and everybody else. But
I don't know.
No, I think you're right.
Just to refresh my memory of why I hate it so much. Well, some people ask me, I have something specific to say.
If it's getting watched, I want to be invited because I want to be here.
It was wonderful to see the evolution of the physicality of the apes.
Yeah, when you were mentioning that earlier, that makes me want to watch it. Oh,
and,
Serge, yeah.
You know, and it was like when I was watching it, I was saying to myself, now here we go, pay dirt. This is what the series
exactly.
has always needed. Thank you. And then you go, story? things to care about? Logic?
Yeah.
So, but the...
Marky Mark.
Charlton Heston as an ape.
Yes, but the makeup and the physicality of the apes, you're like, oh, this is what we've been
That was
needing,
fantastic.
Baby.
Yeah. That
Thank
whole
you.
Scene where they're all the gorillas are, I guess, running across, I was like, That's exactly what you need. Right. That is gets the true physicality of an ape, of a gorilla. And I want to see that. Or the when the Tim Roth is whatever his name is jumping around. I mean, that gets the true physicality of what of a chimpanzee is like.
Was that Rick? That was Rick Baker, right? Rick Baker did the
makeup.
Did he do the makeup? I think he did the makeup effects. Yeah,
he's the ape man.
Those were that was incredible. But then all just the script. I mean, like, oh, whatever.
Tim Roth was scary.
He was great in that.
He really was. And through the makeup, he was just awesome.
But Helena Bonham Carter, like, good actress, but like, what? And just everyone was just doing what they could. Michael Clark Duncan was good. I think he was good as the gorilla.
Yeah.
The representative gorilla.
So we shall all stand by and see what they do with Rise of the Apes.
Yeah. I'm excited.
I think we got to see
the best.
See the remake, though,
It is an ape world after all.
So. A new ride at Disneyland opening up soon.
Right, 20th Century Fox Land. That's right. So on that wonderful, wonderful note, we will say goodbye to you. This has been
Jim Usterman.
And
Tim McMillan.
And
Heidi Hilliker.
And Serge Dolpierre. See you next time.